welcome to a new episode of The Cusp Show, Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson, and I'm going to be solo today. I've got a special guest that we're very excited about. We're really honored and privileged to have Rory Brown, who's the president of Bleacher Report, which many of you know is probably the most popular and successful digitally focused sports media property that's been launched over the last 10 to 15 years. It's a real pleasure to have Rory, so welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So I was looking at your bio, and I saw that you were employee number 12. Just to remind everybody, I know Bleacher Report launched in 2007, was sold to Turner Sports in 2012. So tell us, just kick this off, a little bit about the journey, those early days getting to the point of exit, as they say.
Sure.
The Turner deal.
Yeah, so so people actually don't believe this part of the story, but this is true. I started working at Bleacher Report by answering a Craigslist post. They were looking for someone who was passionate about media, passionate about sports. At the time, I was 3 years in writing for a newspaper publishing company in the Bay Area and was looking to expand my horizons out of news, out of newspapers, tough industry, obviously, at the time and still is. So this job came along. It had benefits. They were very clear. They had about a year and a half, 2 years of runway to see where we could take this thing and went for it, and here we are, 300-some employees later, and offices in New York, San Francisco, and London.
Right, and how many unique visitors per month? Over 60 million at this point?
Yeah, we peaked around 80 million internally.
Wow, so, which is really, when you think about that, and putting this in the historical context of sports media and digital sports media, that's a huge accomplishment, having been less than 10 years to go from zero to that big an audience.
Yeah, we're proud of
quite
that.
Stunning.
Considering it still feels like the days when we were at, a couple thousand people per hour aren't that far away, but, we've obviously grown a lot since then.
Well, also, Rory, I mean, you think about the competition in digital sports content. I mean, it is fierce. You've got leagues doing things. You've got teams. You've got athletes. You've got the social networks with very aggressive agendas. You've got brands doing content marketing, all the major media companies, and then last but not least, the actual fans with user-generated content. So tell us how you made this happen. How did you make it work so successfully in such a short time?
Yeah, so I think the it's interesting that the mission statement of Bleacher Report has changed slightly over the years. We like to pivot. We like to evolve pretty quickly. And, when Bleacher Report first started, we were setting out to cover every team, every topic on the premise that the mainstream media, if you were a fan of the Colorado Rockies, they weren't going to give you Rockies news and information. You might see a score, you might see a highlight. If the Rockies were in the news, you might see something on SportsCenter, but you weren't going to get this immersive content experience about the Rockies. So, we really set out to cover all these teams and topics, and we did it quite well for several years, and that's when Bleacher Report really started to grow an audience and a following. I'd say in the next chapter, especially post-acquisition from Turner, we've really pivoted a little bit and said, there's so much more content out there. Like, content's cool again,
Right.
There's so many people creating content. You just mentioned a lot of great examples. You've got, athletes taking to social media and creating their own content, trying to start their own social platforms in some cases. And you've got the teams themselves, the leagues themselves, other media companies, everyone's creating content. So, our goal is to create best-in-class content. And best-in-class content aimed at the next generation of sports fans, where we know a lot of the players in the space right now are creating content for, yesterday's fans who are older fans today, sure, but are not that next generation of folks who are used to consuming news information on their phones versus a television.
Right, and let's just back up a little bit, because you guys were pioneers in the realm of, how do they call it, crowdsourced journalism.
Yep.
Right? So not too many companies were doing that back in 2007 and 8. You took a little bit of heat from it in the early days.
We did.
And tell us how you kind of evolved from that into the business that you are now.
Yeah, so I joined the company in 2008. And, really in 2009, we started to take a pretty close look at, the operation and how we were going to grow not just traffic, but our brand. And then we made the call in 2010 into I believe it was 2010 to shut off the user-generated aspect of Bleacher Report and we instituted a rider application program. So all riders were vetted, both new and existing riders, massive project. And we knew we'd lose audience because of it. We lost traffic. And at the time, you know, websites were based, their success was based on traffic. And we knew we were going to lose traffic because of it. You know, in hindsight, it was the smartest move the company could have made. And, you know, credit to founder and now CEO Dave Finocchio for making that call at the time. It was a tough one. But we were able to focus on quality. We were able to build the brand. And now we're a media company where, you know, like other media companies, all our contributors are paid. Some of whom, you know, our top contributors especially, you know, are some of the higher paid folks in the industry and creating some really great content.
Yeah, and along the way, you seem to have placed a pretty big and very successful bet on a great mobile application, mobile and tablet application, TeamStream,
yep.
which I believe has been in the top 10 of sports-focused mobile applications in the iTunes Store and the Google Play Store for as long as I can remember.
Yep.
It's a pretty incredible run. How do you account for its sustained success?
I mean, the great part about TeamStream was we... You know, we decided to build this app before anyone had proven you could monetize mobile traffic. We started to realize that the breakdown of our mobile traffic was growing pretty quickly. So we were seeing, you know, every day be 40%, then 42%, then 50%. And we just, you got to go where the audience is in digital media. And sometimes that means you're going into uncharted waters on the revenue side of the company. But we were really confident that if we could capture the audience, the revenue would follow and the marketplace would kind of figure itself out and we could be leaders on the revenue side as well. So, you know, we made that call. We built a mobile app, which, you know, as far as accounting for its success, it put the user first, right? We didn't have to worry about advertising implications. We could just make a really great user experience where if you want to follow a team or you want to follow a topic, there's no better place to do that than in TeamStream, our app. Like, no better place. And that was very clear several years ago. It's still clear today. And,
you know, and excuse me for interrupting. You seem to have had a really good sense of how to handle the user experience
yep.
with TeamStream. That's the thing that I think made the biggest impression on people. You were the first to kind of do a swipe-driven kind of navigation, for example, I
yep.
think. So did you guys analyze that quite deeply, or were you just kind of experimenting as you went along?
A little of both. I think we definitely like to be data-driven at Bleach Report. We always have been. At the same time, you just got to go with your gut and, you know, make a call. And we said, you know what, this looks cooler than the other offerings out there. Let's go for it and see if people get the hang of it. And then obviously, you know, so many other applications became swipe-driven that it was kind of the user standard. And, you know, in addition to that, we curated a lot of content, right? Bleacher Report's TeamStream app isn't just Bleacher Report content. A lot of it is content curated from around the web. And we send millions and millions of visits to other properties, including a lot of places folks would consider competitors to Bleacher Report. And we're okay with that because TeamStream becomes a fan's home base for their team,
right,
for their
that's
sport.
A good point. In fact, let me ask you, how are you doing that curation? Is it human-driven, or are you using
all
certain algorithms? Or?
It's all human-driven.
Okay.
So we have an army of very talented programmers on our team who are charged with creating these great content experiences at the team level. You drill a little bit farther down, we do use some automation to surface a lot of content. We can't do it for the thousands and thousands of teams out there, but... for our top couple hundred teams, it is driven by actual humans.
Right, so they'll be looking at social posts and blogs and things like that and just bringing to the fore the things that are going to be most relevant for, you believe, for the TeamStream and Bleacher Report customers.
You got it.
Very smart.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, you're kind of part of what's becoming an escalating battle in the war of the second screen for live sports events. And I know we're recording this podcast 2 days after Super Bowl 50. There was a lot of attention paid to what was happening on Facebook with Sports Stadium, which had some technical issues and some participation issues, I gather.
Yep.
And Twitter moments, et cetera. I know you guys were doing some live things, some real-time programming against Super Bowl 50. Can you talk about that and let us know how it went?
Yeah, so I think what's interesting, we put a lot of time and effort into the live programming window. It's a space that has gotten increasingly competitive.
Right.
What's interesting when you talk about that live window is, yes, you know, you've got Facebook and Twitter coming out with new products built around the live window. You've got Snapchat and live stories, which aren't always live and people don't really care, right? Because it's kind of a live look in at something. But, you know, we're finding that, you know, we're at the end of the day, we're competing against so much more than just those experiences. You know, we're often competing when we talk about our competitors at Bleach Report. It's very easy to say, well, it's Bleach Report versus ESPN. You know, I'd say really it's Bleach Report versus ESPN. It's Bleach Report versus Netflix. It's Bleach Report versus Amazon. It's anywhere where people are absorbing content.
The attention economy.
Exactly.
Right.
Like time is the new currency, right? So we're, at the end of the day, we're just competing for time. And that goes the same thing for live events. So if Beyonce comes out with this great dance, everyone's looking at Beyonce. No one's looking at Twitter. No one's looking at Facebook. No one's looking at Bleach Report. And we accept that, which is why we, while we continue to invest in the live window, it's more about creating great content that will live throughout the game experience. It's not just something that's just enjoyable for that one moment. So when we have an initiative called our original social group, which is aimed at creating content that lives purely on social, could live on Bleach Report proper and TeamStream as well, but it's more designed for our social platforms. And that team, their motto is to win the moments. So winning the moments means if something really, you know, awesome or funny or unusual happens in the game, the group huddles and they decide what type of content we're going to create around that moment. And that content is going to live well beyond the moment itself. It's going to be what people are going to be talking about the following day after the game as well.
So Rory, many of us, it's a great question, I think, about this, this battle for live, because many of us open our smartphones and we're staring at a few key badges like Twitter, like Facebook, like Snapchat, like TeamStream.
Sure.
And I, for one, for example, use TeamStream on a day-to-day basis, but it wouldn't occur to me right now to think of using it while there's a big game on.
Yep.
And that's nothing against what you're doing, but I and many of us default to Twitter with the hashtag approach. So are you hoping that with the dedicated user base that you have, because we know the Bleacher Report fans are quite passionate, that you could actually change that behavior and capture a piece of market share in the live game?
We do. We just want to pick our battles wisely. So Super Bowl actually is a tricky one because everyone's doing a live component, right? I couldn't tell you because I didn't see it, but I wouldn't be shocked if People Magazine was live blogging the Super Bowl. It's a pop culture entertainment event, not a sporting event. You take something like National Signing Day that we just went through for college football when all the recruits pick the college of the high school recruits pick the college of their choice. And I don't know if you saw, but we had a kid, we worked with him, he committed to Ole Miss by skydiving out of a plane and revealing his school when he landed. It was a really great experience too.
And we had all these, a live video?
So it wasn't a live video, we shot it in advance, but then we added all these graphics and we unveiled that on National Signing Day. So again, not a live video, but something that adds to the live experience of National Signing Day when you've got these diehard college football fans wondering who their teams are going to sign. And you also have the casual sports fan who just wants to see something different than they've seen over the years.
Right. That's a great example. That's really good. So speaking of that, speaking of big events, we've got two coming up on the sports calendar for this winter that you have a big stake in.
Yep.
First, of course, is NBA All-Star Weekend, which is a few days away. And we got March Madness in a few weeks starting. So tell us about what you have planned for those two events because of the Turner relationship and the March Madness NCAA relationship. It's a big thing for you guys.
Yeah, we're really lucky in that with Turner as our parent company, we don't have to worry about access. Access is a really big thing in sports, and we get courtside access to these events. We get access to players. We know what the plans are for the telecast. And what we're going to focus on for those events is it's really similar to the Super Bowl approach, to be honest, where we're going to create content that's going to resonate on social, and we're going to test a lot of that content within TeamStream to see if we can grab some of that market share of a live audience. And while we have Bleach Report content in folks' Facebook news feeds and Twitter, wherever. If they start seeing that in the app, they might start gravitating towards the app a little faster. So, you know, as far as specifics, I know it's going to be a lot of fun content. It's content that really capitalizes on, especially with All-Star, it's a big party with all the best players. It's a huge crossover event, music and pop culture. So look for us to capitalize on that. And the NBA, Turner to their credit, are having Drake and Kevin Hart be, you know, coaches of the celebrity game, right? So they like to get that. They like to get the celebrities in the first couple rows of the dunk contest. It's kind of a who's who in the sports.
Sounds like there could be a good opportunity for Game of Zones.
Absolutely. So
something planned for that?
We won't roll one out. I don't think we're going to roll one out right before All-Star, but you'll see one shortly after for sure.
Good. Okay. Yeah. I know everybody that I know that has checked those out loves them. So yeah. Keep them coming.
Exactly.
So the social extension is something you guys have excelled at. I mean, many would say that you've mastered the art of social publishing better than most publishers, even beyond sports. I know a few years back, when paidcontent.org was a hot blog for this business,
yep.
I remember seeing an analysis done of a Bleacher Report page against an ESPN page for the same story. They actually analyzed the page the way it was published.
Yeah, I remember that.
Where the social links were, how you promoted the authors, etc. What's the secret? Why are you so successful in terms of your leveraging social in the way you publish?
You know, we've just never been afraid of people consuming Bleacher Report content off of Bleacher Report, right. And that has been the worst nightmare of some publishers, and they continue to fight the Facebooks and Twitters, and the bottom line is that's where your content's going to be seen. And yes, it's scary because you can't monetize that content, you can't control every aspect of that content, but you've got to go where the eyeballs are, and they're on these platforms. Many times we compete against these very platforms where our content is featured, right? Some people, especially young sports fans, might open Snapchat before they open TeamStream.
Yeah.
We obviously would like to leapfrog Snapchat in the order of apps that they open every day when they wake up, but that's not going to keep us from working with Snapchat as a partner to figure out how we get our content featured there. So I think we've never been afraid to have good relationships with the social platforms, figure out what's important to them and how we can create content that's going to resonate really well.
Yeah, I think this business is redefining cooperation. So yes. So that said, would you go so far as to be part of the Instant Articles initiative, for example?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Have you tried that yet?
We're in talks with Facebook. We weren't part of the initial group.
Right. Okay.
But absolutely. I think we have really good relationships with Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, other platforms where we've done some tests like on Yik Yak, you know, just for, you know, seeing what's in the messaging world, just to figure out what's out there and continue to experiment.
Yeah. Well, I've been looking for you guys on Snapchat Discover, but it hasn't happened yet.
So we're actually
we're
in the international version of Snapchat Discover. We're the sports publisher there. ESPN has the domestic rights. So it's an ongoing conversation with Snapchat to see if we can sneak in there. I know they're always evaluating the publishers and how the content's resonating. So again, we have a good relationship with them, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So let me remind everybody, we're talking to Rory Brown, the president of Bleacher Report, having a great conversation about the opportunities and challenges in digital sports publishing. You mentioned a few minutes ago the idea of, or the practice of, athlete-driven publishing. So I know you guys are part of an initiative that involves LeBron James, Uninterrupted, and of course you know about Player Tribune, a few other things that are happening right there. So can you comment on that? Tell us first about Uninterrupted, that agenda, and then kind of your thoughts on the bigger picture of athletes jumping into the fray.
Yeah, so we saw an opportunity where athletes were kind of, you know, testing out, taking the reins on the publishing world, right, and not relying on all these platforms and trying to do something themselves. And we worked with LeBron and his team to set up Uninterrupted, and it's been a really interesting experiment. And I would still call it an experiment at this point, but it's definitely had some really successful moments where, you know, the bottom line is the initiative is going to be as good as the content. And some athletes are really open and are really great at putting content out there that's going to resonate with folks that they can't get anywhere else, which that's going to be the strength of any platform, right? It's got some level of exclusivity to it, even if you're using other platforms to distribute the content. There's other athletes that, you know, and I don't blame them, where we live in this world where you've got to be really careful what you say, and they don't want to be an open book. They'd rather keep things to themselves, right, and not comment on things, especially things that are kind of off the court issues, politics, et cetera, you name it, where they're not looking to alienate their fan bases or have something taken out of context. I will say, to the credit of Uninterrupted, so LeBron James, Mav Carter, other folks on that team, that's the whole idea, right, where you get the whole message from the athletes. You're not getting the 20-second soundbite that can be taken out of context, mm-hmm, and used against them, you know, the next day where Stephen A. Smith is, you know, screaming about something. You get to see the full 5 or 6 minutes of what that athlete's talking about, let them explain themselves outside of a courtside or press conference environment.
Is there any editing happening?
No. Wow. Not on Uninterrupted.
So that's an amazing aspect of this, yeah, too. Because I remember the first iteration of Uninterrupted was, I remember I was struck by how raw the page looked in an okay way.
Yeah.
It was literally just a bunch of thumbnails of videos from athletes.
Yeah.
That's been dressed up since then nicely.
Yeah, and I think that's the balance that publishers are trying to find right now, where you look at something like the Players Tribune, which is way more refined. I think there have been some pieces that have come across as really successful in the Players Tribune, and they've been doing some really interesting things, experimenting. You know, Kevin Durant was shooting the Super Bowl as a photographer for the Players Tribune, which on site, which I don't know how good those photos are, but right, it's interesting, right? It got people talking.
Right.
I think there's also been, and I'm not trying to single out the Players Tribune, I think across a lot of these platforms where the content has come across as not authentic, which is, right, the worst thing you can do in this case, because people, yeah, want authentic content on their platforms, old or new. And once they feel like it's not, then they tune out.
Right. So that said, are you vetting any new athletes that come to the Uninterrupted platform? In other words, there's going to be a certain number of athletes that just have the natural skill as speakers and storytellers and authentic voices to be of value to you and the fans and,
yep,
the customers, and there are others that just don't have that talent.
Yeah, so we've turned over the process of vetting the athletes is on the Uninterrupted team, and we're kind of one of their preferred media partners.
Okay.
But at this point, that's on them, and we're
so it's technically an independent entity.
It is,
okay,
and we're a key distributor of that, and obviously helped launch it and want nothing but success,
okay,
for them. But the vetting process, that's all on them.
Yeah. So does Bleacher Report have kind of a some sort of exclusive as far as sports portals go?
Sports portals.
I mean, in other words, broader sports publishers, you know, this content is actually quite valuable.
Oh.
So you don't want it everywhere. You'd want it to go through Bleacher Report as much as possible, I assume.
Yes. We have something actually planned with them for All-Star Weekend where we'll be the exclusive digital platform for the,
wow,
for the content.
That's
so
great.
It should be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I won't spoil the surprise, but it's pretty,
okay,
neat, and we'll see how that goes.
And it's still 100% video, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it'll remain that way.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Are you guys? Just one more question about Uninterrupted, because I think it's a fascinating initiative. Are you guys giving them kind of any top line editorial guidance at any of these initiatives?
We have. So obviously, you know, the great thing about Bleacher Report is we have, you know, years and years of data on just the types of topics that are going to resonate with fans. And we have given some direction on occasion where we, you know, if we hear there's a new athlete coming on, hey, it'd be great to get them to talk about X. And the tricky part is it's hard to get people to talk about exactly what you want, right? So sometimes they might have an idea already of what they want to talk about, and that may or may not be interesting or may or may not be that relevant to a lot of fans. And I will say when the athletes do take the direction, it really clicks. And a lot of that is just getting these athletes in different environments. I mean, some of the content we've seen really perform is LeBron talking from his hotel room, from his plane, coming back from the Ohio State game, I think, a year ago. And, you know, not just in a locker room or a courtside or on the practice court where fans are very accustomed to seeing LeBron. Like they like these little details and Easter eggs around him to get a better idea of the type of life he leads and where he is and what he's doing.
Do you guys look at beyond sports to get some inspiration for some state-of-the-art digital media ideas and approaches, let's say in the news category, like BuzzFeed or Medium or Huffington Post or the like?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when it comes to how inventive and original publishers are, I would say sports often lags behind the competition because sports has the luxury of these live events that people still care very much about watching them live versus, you know, the news world or the entertainment world where, you know, there's this constant cycle of news. The 6 o'clock news telecast isn't as powerful as it once was. And outside of things like the Grammys or the Oscars or an election, you're not going to get people tuning in live to their television, even an election at this point. Like, you know, you can watch that a million different ways and follow along. And so it's been really interesting to see different publishers try different things. I mean, I give the New York Times a ton of credit where you've got this, you know, media institution that's been around forever, ton of problems, ton of challenges that they've had to take on with their business. From a visual standpoint, they're best in class. And they've created some content experiences of both kind of one-off stories, as like the Snowfall piece they did a while ago that was just like this visual masterpiece that got passed around. And then you have something like the election where they're using this mix of data and editorial to create these really cool visual stories that people can follow along with and learn about things they care about deeply. And that's led us to we actually hired someone who goes by Smith, just Smith, one name.
Okay.
Who used to be a key player on the design side at the New York Times. He works for Bleacher Report now.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Yep.
So a few more minutes. I'd like to talk about expansion and looking ahead in terms of new initiatives. So first on the subject of expansion, in terms of globalization, I assume you have your eyes on larger, broader marketing opportunities, content distribution opportunities, and being involved in other countries. What's on the docket for that?
Yeah, so we have a 25 person office in London, which is primarily content based. We do have some members of our revenue team out there as well. But I mean, soccer is our fastest growing sport, has been for quite some time, or football, as they call it everywhere else in the world. You know, it's a sport we've put a lot of focus on, and so now we're looking to replicate the success we've had with U.S. sports, you know, with soccer, where we're creating a lot of video content, a lot of social content, content that we know is going to resonate in these various windows, whether that be in-game, post-game, between games, around events, etc. What's been really interesting in the U.K. in particular is, in some ways, it's a great scenario. It's a lot of legacy publishers, right? I mean, you think the New York Times has been around a while. You look at, you know, some of these other institutions in the UK, and you've got, you know, BBC, Telegraph, others that have these very, very loyal audiences because they've been the media properties of choice for so long. So there's this great opportunity for Bleacher Report to come in and disrupt this market. What's complicated here is, when you're the first to come in and try and disrupt, that's going to take some time, right? We're not following somebody else's coattails here. And I know, you know, the BuzzFeed and Vices of the world, they have UK presences as well. But when it comes to sports, we're the player really trying to shake things up. So, you know, when we have people that follow our social accounts, that download our app, they're hooked, right? They love the Bleacher Report experience. The word of mouth, the marketing process on that, takes longer in a market where people are so used to, you know, watching the games a certain way, reading about them, watching video content a certain way. So we're trying to really break through that wall.
Right. So can you talk specifically about any other territories you have your eye on, like the Far East or South America
So we've run some tests, and so we actually see our content resonate very well in Australia. And that is not because of some masterful Bleacher Report marketing campaign. It's because the NBA has done a great job of becoming a global brand. There's a good amount of NBA players who are from Australia, right? So you got Patty Mills, you've got others. And, we create content about these folks, and they're looking to follow. And just like anyone else, they like our social accounts, they like our content, they like our app. And it's a great way to reach a global audience, but we're pretty careful. We're not looking to, you know, put thousands of employees' boots on the ground anytime soon in other countries. It is something we're always thinking about and talking about. But, I mean, in this day and age, with the power of some of these platforms, you know, Facebook, Snapchat, et cetera, becoming, like, huge forces at the global level, we can use them. We can leverage those platforms to get content.
Yeah, they can be the canaries in the coal mine in different countries for you, right?
Exactly,
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. I suppose if you say there's potential with Australia because of the popularity of the NBA, I could just imagine China in a few years, more Chinese players come over and make it to the NBA.
Absolutely.
And the fan base of NBA fans is unbelievably large. So
yep, Southeast Asia as well, especially on, I mean, you know, no secret that during Manny Pacquiao fights, you'll see traffic from the Philippines spike like crazy. And I mean, Philippines, honestly, in other areas of Southeast Asia, NBA is pretty popular. Soccer is really popular. You know, we've seen European countries, I think Germany, the Netherlands, we see a lot of interest, soccer, NBA. There's, you know, it's, sports are great. They're global, like except for U.S. football, which, you know, they're trying to get to be more global. And it's obviously our top sport within the U.S., but, you know, that's an American sport.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So one last question, and this has been a terrific conversation. Thank you so much. We all know that many people are saying this is the year of VR, because we've got Oculus Rift launching their new hardware. We've got Samsung out with Gear, and then the recent announcement, very recent announcement that Google is going to go beyond cardboard and make real goggles soon enough. So anything on the horizon that you can talk about vis-a-vis VR content as you expect the user base to grow?
It's a hot topic at Bleacher Report. I think we have a lot of employees in particular that are really passionate about the potential of the new technology. So at Bleacher Report, we like to let our employees embrace this, right? So I started up an email chain with all the people that I know are passionate about it. I just said, talk and see what comes
talk
of it, right?
Yourself.
So some interesting things have come, and they're sharing a lot of interesting content. There's a lot of interesting things being written about the space right now. It's going to take some time for people to figure out what we do with this technology. Personally, I feel very strongly that it's not going to be as easy as making more immersive movie, just general storytelling experiences, which is all the, as people show off the how impressive the technology, that's usually the context, that in gaming, right? Those are the big things. Right. I tend to think that there's no reason why, as we continue to see short form content, both in the forms of storytelling and content that might be really visual, stuff that's built for social channels, that people have the patience and interest to actually watch. It might be a 3 or 4 minute something versus a 2 hour movie. I think that short form content is probably the sweet spot where VR could really take off. If people can experience a lot of different things in a completely different way in a short amount of time, that's a pretty good sell versus saying, hey, you've got to sit down and watch this movie for 3 hours and hope you don't get too dizzy.
Yeah, and also if it's the kind of content where a singular director's perspective is not necessary.
Exactly.
Right, because you want to have that flexibility. So could we conceivably see something for you guys by the end of 2016?
I don't know on timeline, but it's something we're going to look at very carefully. And we know there's a play for Bleacher Report there. We just want to figure out exactly what it is.
Well, that's great. That's a good way to end it, too. So, Rory Brown from Bleacher Report, thank you very much for that terrific conversation.
Thank you.
I think we learned today that anybody paying attention to digital media in the sports field will want to pay attention to Bleacher Report. They've been innovative, they've been progressive, and they continue to write new chapters on how this business is going to progress. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next time on The Cusp Show.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cusp Show. That's the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson. My co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student James Appel. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and on other key platforms. You can also see it at blogtalkradio.com/thecuspshow. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CUSportsBiz, that's B-I-Z. Also, you can find out more about our program, the Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you.